It's time for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. Every week, Steve will give us timely tips for caring for our plants. He'll answer your questions and give us expert advice. Now here's a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. We're here with Steve Stone. It's a walk through the garden with Steve Stone, Saturday morning. So what are we talking about today, Steve?
Well, there's a lot of different things that is going on now with, again, temperatures that we have been having. And the besides temperatures, humidity. And as humidity sneaks up, there's always going to be disease issues cropping up. And we've gotten through a pretty humid week. Humidity levels are up, and we've had some sporadic rain showers blowing through. So, like I said, the humidity is definitely stepping up. So we're going to start seeing, if we haven't yet, we're going to start seeing some different disease issues pop up. And was noticing that this week on a number of different plants. Specifically, I was noticing some powdery mildew popping up. I looked at a lilac this week and also a weigelia this week that was showing symptoms of powdery mildew. Powdery mildew looks like kind of a white powder sprinkled on plants. It has a kind of a ghostly white color to the foliage. You'll usually see it on the, mostly I guess on the top sides of the leaves. And it is a plant, or it is a disease with woody plants that's usually not anything to get overly excited about. Specifically with lilacs, they'll tolerate it just fine. You don't necessarily have to put a fungicide on to control it. Weigelias, on the other hand, they can get it a little bit more. It can infect more of the foliage with weigelia, and so you may consider doing an application. Also, roses are very susceptible to powdery mildew. So with roses as well, you can get some pretty, depending on the variety of rose, you can get some pretty significant defoliation left untreated. And so that would be a really good plant to consider doing a fungicide on if you've got any variety of rose. And then ninebark is another plant that is just horribly susceptible to powdery mildew and, again, can cause a lot of defoliation and significant dieback. So the disease affects plants in different ways, and again, you know, lilacs, especially the common lilacs, kind of shrug it off, and it's never usually a big deal. Other plants, again, certainly with roses, you can justify doing a fungicide application to control that, because it can cause, like I said, significant defoliation, in which case is going to hinder how the plant grows and develops, and certainly hinders its blooming. If it doesn't have any leaves, it's probably not going to be putting out a lot of flowers.
On the powdery mildew, are most plants susceptible to it, and some are more tolerable, or do they leave some plants alone, or what's
It's a very, very common disease. You can see powdery mildew on turf. Kentucky bluegrass is notorious for getting powdery mildew, and it's a little early to see that. Again, you need a specific, you know, amount of humidity for certain nights. Also, airflow makes a big difference. So if you're at certain golf courses, I noticed just because it's out by the highway, Northmore Country Club over in Salina, there between Salina and St. Mary's. I don't golf that course enough to know all the holes, but there's a hole that's real close to the road, and they have,
I think that's number one.
They
I
have
believe.
Fans. But no, one goes east.
Okay.
But this one is possibly eight and nine coming in
along,
on the west
yep.
side.
Yep. Yep.
They have fans like in the trees hanging, blowing towards the green. And the reason that is the opposite, the west side of that driveway that goes back into Northmore, the little community where there's a lot of houses. Mm-hmm. It's all wooded right there, densely wooded. And then that green right there is fairly densely wooded all the way around it.
Yeah.
So you have stagnant air. The air doesn't move, doesn't flow. It's always kind of, I don't know what the right word is. It's always stagnant. The air's not moving.
Yeah.
And so you typically aren't going to have a lot of disease issues when you have moving air. That's why in our greenhouses, we have the fans on the furnaces that blow the heat out, but we also have horizontal air movement fans that actually circulate the air in the greenhouse. You don't want dead airspace because that's just perfect conditions for diseases to crop up. So I've been to other golf courses too that are usually, you know, have greens that are wooded because bent grass on golf course greens are really susceptible to different types of diseases. And so they try to move the air around, keep the air moving all the time, and then that way you don't have disease issues. So if you've got roses, Neil, in your backyard and you don't want them to get, you could set some, like, you know, box fans out of your house. Next to them, run an extension cord out there.
I could, but they have pretty decent exposure from the west.
That's true. So air movement makes a big difference. I think it's the old golf course superintendent's rule is if the air temperature and the humidity add up to, I think, 150 or 160, you're going to have disease problems. So if the relative humidity is, you know, 70 or 75 and the temperatures are 80 or 85, anything, I think it's either 150 or 160. If it adds up to that, you're probably going to start seeing disease issues. Now, we haven't had really warm temperature. I mean, we've had warm temperatures, but you have to have that consistency for a number of days in a row. But again, we're getting there with the humidity that you're going to start seeing diseases pop up. I was in a lawn this week that had red thread really bad, and red thread is a turf disease that we'll get into normally Kentucky bluegrass, but you'll also see it in rye grass, and occasionally you'll see it turf type tall fescue, but it's unusual to see it in turf type tall fescue. But red thread is a turf disease, and it kind of looks like I'm describing it. There's actually a red thread, which is the mycelia that actually grows out of the blade of grass. And at a glance, it kind of looks like a red spot in the turf or kind of a pinkish hue to the spot, and then you'll start seeing the turf kind of brown out around those areas. And that is a turf disease that it causes, aesthetically it's an issue. It causes the turf to kind of go off color and it looks bad, and it'll be spotty. You'll have spots all over the yard. The yard I was just on recently looked pretty bad, and the homeowner was pretty concerned with what they were dealing with. A couple of things with that is it's not a disease that you could really honestly justify doing a fungicide on, because red thread's going to come and go relatively quickly. The rainfall that we've had, the way the grass is growing, temperatures, humidity, all are creating the problem. And basically, if you apply just a little fertilizer, a real light application of fertilizer, basically what you can do is just kind of grow the problem out of the turf. And it's not long lived in your turf, and it doesn't kill the crown or the roots. It just kind of damages the blades. And so if you're noticing that in your lawn, I have seen a lot of it this week. Kind of snuck up on me. I hadn't seen it for a long time. I thought maybe we were past and just didn't have it this season, but it is starting to kind of rear its ugly head here all of a sudden. But again, it's something that's going to pass relatively quickly.
Now, does someone need to treat that?
The red thread?
Yeah.
It's really not necessary. It's certainly not necessary to go to the effort and the expense to apply a fungicide. Turf fungicides can be quite expensive. The material itself, and then also the application, and if you're doing your whole yard, it's not as inexpensive as, you know, 2,4-D. 2,4-D app, you know, 2,4-D can be, you know, $30 for a gallon, you know, and a gallon goes a long way. When you get into specific formulations on fungicides, you can be talking hundreds of dollars, hundreds and hundreds of dollars just to in material to treat your yard.
Okay.
And so you really have to have a good justification for that kind of expense.
And it's not going to kill it. It's just going to look bad.
Exactly. It's not going to kill the turf, crown, roots, and all, where some diseases will do that. Pythium is a disease that you have to treat. And even if you do treat it, once you see it, it causes a tremendous amount of damage. And that's something that you would more commonly see on like a high maintenance type of a turf, like a golf course or athletic field or something like that. So I think we've talked about that in the past. That's something that you would want to consider doing, a preventative type of a fungicide application, because once you're to the point where you're trying to do a curative application, they get to be a lot more expensive because you're actually putting more product down. And once you start to see the issue, it's really hard to get. You're already behind the eight ball. It's hard to get caught up.
Yep.
So we'll take a break and we'll be back.
The versatile Kubota B-Series is a do-it-all tractor. Run powerful attachments that can be easily switched out. It features a hydrostatic transmission and is simple to maintain. The Kubota B-Series. It makes the hard work look easy. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo.
Your local Kubota dealer is Hall Brothers in Fort Recovery, Ohio.
Buying a new grill from a big warehouse is like trying to start your old grill. You can end up standing around by yourself and nothing happens. That's not what happens at Ace. Wengler Ace Hardware has an exclusive lineup of premium brands plus premium service from the people who know you best. We'll make sure you get the right grill, whether it's gas, wood pellet, or a flat top griddle. And better yet, we'll assemble and deliver it right to your patio. Don't forget, your newest grill is never far away, and neither is our help. That's why grilling starts at Ace. Stop by Wengler Ace Hardware in Fort Recovery, your grilling destination.
Are you looking to become a part of a company that uses the vision of their team members to assist them in becoming successful? Cooper Farms does just that. We utilize the ideas and visions of our team members to make our processes better, easier, safer today. The Fort Recovery Division of Cooper Farms is currently seeking individuals to fill open egg packaging and sanitation positions. To learn more about these positions, as well as other open positions, please visit cooperfarms.com/join our team. Cooper Farms, more than a workplace.
We're wild about reading at the Fort Recovery Public Library, and we are excited to begin our 2021 summer reading program, Tales and Tales, on June 7th. Whether you pick up a book about fairy tales, folk tales, or animal tales at the library this summer, you'll be sure to learn something new and have fun. We'll have some special story times with players from the Grand Lake Mariners and employees of Cheeseman Transport, and those are sure to be big hits with the kids. We have animal programs, music, games, crafts, and more planned for your summer reading program. A calendar of events can be found at the library. Some events will require registration, so stop by your library or call 375-2869. The summer reading program runs from June 7th through July 14th, with a pool party and prizes for the young participants on Wednesday evening, July 14th, and adult prizes being drawn on Saturday, July 17th. A big thank you to the summer reading program sponsors, Psi Iota Xi Sorority, and the Friends of the Library. Get your kids involved in their annual summer reading program, Tales and Tales, starting Monday, June 7th at your library.
We're back with Steve Stone, A Walk Through the Garden. And we've been talking about mold and other things that can affect your lawn and other plants. Are we staying on that, or are we going to something else?
Well, with the, again, the time of year that it is, seeing, again, we were talking before the break about different types of diseases, looked again at some different plants, trees, basically. There's maples, mostly in the sugar maple family, seeing a maple leaf blister on the foliage of mostly maple, sugar maples, but I don't think I've seen it on the red maples or the Norway maples. The maple leaf blister is a disease that can get into the leaves, and it kind of causes some brown spots or dead tissue in the leaves. And then the leaves, depending on where that tissue kind of starts to turn brown and die, it can cause the leaves to kind of wrinkle or kind of crinkle up. And that looks very similar to anthracnose. Anthracnose is another foliage disease that you'll commonly see on maples. You used to see them, ash trees were horribly susceptible to anthracnose. Well, thanks to the
emerald ash
borer, we don't have a lot of ash trees around here anymore. So the disease issue isn't a concern because the emerald ash borer pretty much wiped out all of our native ash trees. And so, but it is a disease that will commonly get into maples. You'll see it in oaks. Now I'm talking about anthracnose. And you certainly, I think I talked last week about how it will affect London plane trees or sycamores can get that disease pretty bad and cause some significant defoliation. Also on maple trees, there's an insect right now that you'll find, again, on a lot of different varieties of maples, but again, mostly kind of attacks the sugar maples. And you'll see it in Norway maples too, is the petiole. There's a maple petiole borer. And the petiole is the part of the leaf, the little delicate stem that holds the leaf to the branch. And there's actually an insect that will lay an egg or two inside that petiole. And as the egg hatches and the larvae comes out, it will eat all the tissue inside that petiole. And then the leaf will literally just kind of break off. So it falls in your yard and it's perfectly green. But if you pick it up and look at that petiole, you'll see where it's completely hollowed out. So when you get home from work sometime and you have a maple tree, you might see, you know, 100 leaves in your backyard that are perfectly green and they're laying there and you're like, well, what the, my trees, the most common thing is my tree's dying. And, you know, you run out and take a look at it and it's like, no, yeah, the tree lost a 100 leaves, but in the whole scope of things, that's not a big deal.
Now that doesn't get into the rest of the tree or anything else.
Nope.
It just affects that particular leaf.
Very specific that it will just affect that leaf and that specific petiole. And they will come and go. Some years you see it a lot more frequently than others. This year I really only looked at one particular home that had that problem. And there's been past years where, you know, I'll get calls all spring about it. But this year seems to be relatively mild as far as that goes. Again, still seeing a lot of insect and disease issues. Seeing again some leaves dropping again because of the petiole borer. Also, I looked at an oak tree that had an awful lot of the lady was super concerned about the oak tree. Had a lot of holes in the leaves and leaves kind of curling and cupping and just a lot of funky things going on. And it actually wasn't one specific thing attacking that tree. It was actually a number of different things. There was a disease working on those leaves, and I saw some anthracnose, which again is pretty minor on a large oak tree. It's not going to affect it real adversely over the long haul. But there was a shot hole leaf miner, which is an insect that again damages the foliage, and the foliage will have holes in it that'll just be nearly perfectly round. So it almost looks like a, you know, bird shot hit the leaf and there's just perfectly round holes everywhere. That's actually an insect problem. And again, once you see the problem specifically with this insect, once you see the problem, the life cycle of the insect, it's come and gone. So that applying an application at this point probably is not going to be worth the time, effort, and dollars that go into it, because the damage is done, the tree's not going to croak, the foliage is going to look ratty pretty much all season. Some of the leaves that are super damaged may end up falling, and it will be replaced by some new leaves. But for the most part, when you have that shot hole, when you have that shot hole leaf miner, it's not anything that's, again, you can apply at this point, because the life cycle of the insect has kind of come, created the problem or the damage, and already kind of moved on. And so that's nothing to get excited about. And then also there's a shot hole leaf blight, which will usually attack things in the cherry family, which is the prunus family. So like your plum bush is very susceptible. Your weeping cherries are very susceptible. And again, those will cause, actually that causes dead tissue in the leaf. It turns brown, and then very quickly with rain or wind or whatever, that dead tissue will fall out of the leaf. So you're left with a perfectly, again, a perfectly round hole. And then the homeowner calls you and says, well, I've got bugs eating holes in my leaves. So you drive out, take a look at it. It's like, well, no, that's not an insect that created that problem. That was the shot hole blight, or shot hole leaf blight. And so again, just a lot of things happening right now. And again, some people catch it very quickly and are very, very concerned. And then some people, you know, miss it completely. Again, I really can't stress enough, if you've got questions, concerns, issues, something that just doesn't look right, you know, give your local, you know, nursery professional a call and have them come out. And again, if they're honest, you know, like me, they're going to tell you, yes, that's something that should be treated, because it could create some long-term problems with your plants. Or again, if it's, you know, like anthracnose, there's no reason to treat that. As we get into warmer temperatures and like we're having now, it's nothing that's going to reoccur. So the damage is there. It's not going to get any worse. And applying a fungicide is certainly a waste of time. And somebody that would recommend, again, putting a fungicide on Red Thread, unless you are managing the Augusta National Golf Course, probably not necessary to go to the money and the effort to put a fungicide down on Red Thread, because it's going to come and go very quickly.
Yep, and not cause permanent damage.
Yep.
So that's good. So you want to take another break?
Take a break and we'll come back and finish up.
All righty.
Hi, this is Steve Stone from Nature's Green, and if you need any or all the quality products to get started on your lawn and landscape this spring, we have it at Nature's Green. Soils, mulch, flowers, vegetable plants, seeds, trees, shrubs, perennials, insecticides, fungicides, you name it, we have it. But most of all, we have the knowledge and expertise that will help you get through any project. Stop out and see us at Nature's Green and load up on everything you need, or we can deliver it. Just call us at 419-375-2322. Nature's Green, your landscape's best friend.
Proudly serving the Fort Recovery area for over 23 years, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has the expertise to handle any dirt work you need. From installing waterways and building pads to demolition work and septic system installation, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has all the equipment you need to get the job done right. Does your driveway need some fresh gravel, or do you need some dirt hauled in? We can take care of all your hauling needs as well. Give Brian a call at 419-852-6655. Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage.
It's grilling season, and Wayne Street Market has everything you need for your cookout. Steaks, hamburgers, brats, hot dogs, it's all there at Wayne Street Market. Fresh vegetables, baked beans, potato salad, chips and dips, pop, beer, wine, it's all there. Stop in and stock up now so you're ready to go when you fire up the grill. Wayne Street Market, the best meat market around. It's that time of year again. The Trinity Lutheran Church is having their annual ice cream social on Sunday, June 12th from 3:30 to 7:30. They have all your favorite flavors from years past: pineapple, maple nut, strawberry, chocolate, and vanilla, and this year they've added peach. Besides their awesome homemade ice cream, they'll also have hot dogs, coney dogs, sloppy joes, and cream turkey, plus cookies, pie, brownies, or angel food cake, all for a free will donation. Stop in and visit with friends while you enjoy the great food and ice cream, or you can pick it up and take it home. And don't forget to take home an extra half gallon or two of their delicious homemade ice cream. All your old favorites, plus their new peach ice cream. Don't miss it. The Trinity Lutheran Church's Ice Cream Social from 3:30 to 7:30 on Sunday, June 12th, at the corner of Wayne Street and 49, the church with the beautiful carillon bells.
We're back on a walk through the garden with Steve Stone, and we've been talking about some diseases, bugs, things that are worth treating and some that aren't.
Yep.
And so what are we going to do here in our last segment?
Last segment, we just want to talk about watering. We're kind of getting through spring already, and we're starting to look at summer. We certainly had some summer-like temperatures this last week. Well, and we had some showers blow through. They were really, really spotty. I know some places over around Coldwater, between like Coldwater, Salina, and east of Salina, got some pretty significant rain. And then, like, I got nothing. I mean, I barely got a tenth, and they were calling for rain all week. And I just I didn't get hardly anything. So watering becomes pretty critical if you've got new plants that have been installed. And when I say new plants, certainly anything that's been installed this season, but I would still consider new plants to be plants that were installed like last season, like last fall. If we do get into a hot, dry period, which hasn't been an issue at all really so far, but if we do get into, you know, July and August and we start missing all the showers, watering is hugely important for keeping the plants happy and healthy, especially if you do annuals. They're certainly not rooted in enough at this point to tolerate a long period of time without water. So watering is critical to keeping those things happy and healthy. I always have people ask me about, you know, fertilizing your pots and your annuals, and using a good, you know, water soluble fertilizer is always a good idea when we're growing and taking care of and watering plants at the nursery. We usually are in a regiment where we'll water, we'll fertilize like for three irrigations, and then we'll do a clear water, and then we'll fertilize three times, and then we'll do a clear water. So I always have people say, well, I'm going to burn the plants up. If you're mixing a good quality water-soluble fertilizer and you're mixing it to label rates, and you're not doubling label rates or tripling label rates, if you're doing it the way you're supposed to be doing it, it's pretty much impossible to burn the plants. The parts per million, the amount of nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium that's going into that plant is going to be perfect for feeding it, keeping it happy and healthy and growing. But certainly, again, if you're doing it according to label rates, you're not going to be able to harm, hurt, or burn the plants with that water-soluble fertilizer. Makes a huge difference. There's a lot of annuals like petunias, specifically geraniums, are heavy feeders. They're hungry all the time. So using a water soluble fertilizer versus just, you know, simply using clear water makes a big difference in growth rate, makes a big difference in flowering, consistent blooming, and just overall health. If you're feeding the plants, they're going to be very healthy and happy. So watering frequently is, you know, and when we start getting into kind of these, you know, dog days of summer when it gets a little, you know, warmer, and especially when it's warm and breezy, a lot of times those containers and certainly hanging baskets are going to need watered. I mean, Nikki and I water every night, every evening or morning, depending on when we're at work and when we're not at work. Every morning or evening, we're watering something, especially again when it gets, you know, hot and dry. And that's annuals. You know, if we've got new trees or shrubs or perennials that are planted in the ground, you know, that's something that you might be able to get by with watering, you know, maybe two or three times a week. And if they've been in for, you know, a month or two, you may only have to water them once a week or once every other week. The ground's going to tell you when it's thirsty. The ground, you know, is going to, you know, crack and kind of open up, and you can see then that the ground is dry. So that's different than watering containers. Nikki and I do a lot of containers. I can't even tell you how many, you know, containers we do every year, and have them out front and out back and everywhere. And that's something, again, that, you know, when it gets hot and dry, is just simply something that should be watered probably every day, especially when it's warm and breezy. The wind moving makes a big difference. It dries stuff out really fast.
Yep. So you got watering of things that you need to kind of keep an eye on. And you say generally fertilize with the water three times and then clear? Is that
yeah, it's always a good idea to do a clear water. When you're using water-soluble fertilizers, depending on the manufacturer and your water quality, if it's coming from the city or if it's coming from a well, there can be a thing called soluble salts that can build up in your soil. And that clear water, that comes potentially from your fertilizer. Clear water can leach all that stuff out, and it kind of starts you over fresh. If you're watering with city water, good luck. It's you know, it's obviously treated. It's got fluoride in it. It's got chlorine in it, and it's, you know, and usually the pH is really, really, really high with any city water. Mm-hmm. Fort Recovery cold water doesn't matter. For whatever reason, the pH, I've tested it before, and the pH can be up around 8, and that's really high. Plants are going to like a pH more around 6.5 to 6.7. And so if you can collect rainwater, or if you're lucky enough to be able to collect rainwater, or if you're lucky like me and you have a cistern, you can use, you know, rainwater, which is a lot softer and the pH is a lot better. And so your plants are really going to thrive. Again, it depends on how particular you are. I mean, it wouldn't hurt if you haven't had luck in a number of years with, you know, your containers or your garden and you're in town. You know, you can do a water test, and the water test will tell you pH, and you can buy different types of fertilizers that will drive the pH down. Like we work out at Nature's Green, we work with a well, but our well water comes from limestone aquifers, and so the pH is a little bit higher than what we want it to be. And so we buy a specific type of fertilizer that actually helps drive the pH down a little bit, so we get it below 7. Instead of it being 7.2 or 7.4, we try to keep it at 7 or below. And we can just simply accomplish that with a specific type of water-soluble fertilizer. And depending on, you know, again, there's lots of different manufacturers out there with water-soluble fertilizers. You know, everybody thinks of Miracle-Gro or Rapid-Gro, which is a fine product. Miracle-Gro also makes a product called Miracid, and it's not going to burn you, Neil, if you put it on your hands.
Oh, well, that's good.
I think the Miracle-Gro, they usually turn your water kind of a green as you're mixing it. Miracid turns your water blue, which is just simply coloring and dyes. But the Miracid actually is a fertilizer, but it drives pH down. And so I've seen people, and I've had people complain over the years, that if you're watering consistently all summer long, and by the time you get to fall, specifically Million Bells and sometimes some varieties of wave petunias will start to go kind of yellow off color. That's just telling me that there's a nutrient deficiency in there. And again, it just has to do with the watering all the time, and you're not giving the plants the right nutrients that they need. So something like that Miracid will change the soil chemistry enough that you probably could get those leaves to kind of green back up again. And then we have the same issue at the nursery. The longer we grow plants, the longer the crop is to take to finish, start to finish. Again, the more difficult time you have kind of managing the pH and the fertility level. So with our annuals, you know, we like those because they're pretty easy, because we grow them in January, February, and March, and then hopefully by April, May, they're mostly all sold. So that's a pretty short season. If you have a longer season crop, then you start worrying about, you know, again, fertility levels and pH and all that stuff. Yep. Am I getting too technical?
Well, probably too technical for us to completely understand, but it's also good that we know that you know what you're talking about and you can give us good advice. So as long as you're not expecting us to memorize all of this and just realize
there will be a test.
Well, at the end of the season.
At the end of the season, in the fall, there's going to be a test.
Well, I will fail that test. And whenever I have a problem, I will call my local nursery person and have them solve my problems for me. I will call my tutor.
That's right. Well, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And again, please give us a call or email, text if you've got, you know, questions.
Yeah, just things that you might be wondering about, or things that you have a pretty good idea about and think might be of interest to other people.
Yep, I had a client just today send me a bunch of pictures of a spruce tree and was concerned about what it was doing, and she was asking me a lot of questions. She sent me a bunch of texts, and I said, kind of hard to answer those. I said, you're probably out in the backyard looking at the tree. Why don't you send me a couple pictures? And so she sent me some pictures and made it a lot easier to figure out what was going on. So,
yep.
Give us a call. You can send us a text. You can send me an email at steve@naturescreennursery.com. And certainly check emails multiple times during the day, and we can get to it on a Saturday.
Yep. Well, we appreciate it, Steve. We'll see you again next week.
Thanks for joining us again this week for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. If you have a gardening question you'd like Steve to answer, just email him at steve@naturesgreennursery.com and he'll answer it on a later show. Be sure to join us again next week for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone.